Hey everyone, this is Josh, co-founder of Urban Valor. Welcome to another episode of the Urban Valor podcast. Our guest today is Army veteran Jesse Galvan. Jesse grew up in the Inland Empire of Southern California. He experienced childhood sexual trauma, which changed the course of his upbringing. As Jesse got older, his father made him decide between college and the military. Jesse chose to enlist in the Army as a combat engineer. During his enlistment, Jesse was diagnosed with cancer. It left him worried, scared, and wanting to take his life at one point. If you enjoyed this episode, go give us a 5-star rating and leave a comment to help support our veterans. The bigger the community, the bigger the impact. If you'd like to contribute your story to Urban Valor or know anyone else who may, reach out on Instagram at Urban Valor TV, or you can email me at josh@urbanvalor.com. Enjoy the show.
Hey man, yeah, my name is Jesse Galvan. I serve in the United States Army as a 12 Bravo, a combat engineer. My years of service were 2015 to the mid of 2018. Yeah, so I'm from Southern California, the Inland Empire to be exact. I grew up in a Mexican-American household. I was a child in a two-parent household. I was kind of raised by blue-collar workers. My father has been a blue-collar worker his whole life, so I feel like that's he kind of instilled, you know, like that hard work mindset. Mm-hmm. And I'm one of four siblings. I was the firstborn, so I was kind of like the guinea pig. Mm-hmm. So my mom still worked. Both parents worked at the time. And I had my second brother at the time, and we were get babysat. So we would go to a babysitter's house, and this is when I was a kid. So when I was in first, second grade, I remember her oldest son, it only happened one time, but I know that this is something that I've never shared too much to anybody. But he touched me, and he had me touch him too. So at the time, I didn't even realize what was going on. But I guess I was sexually assaulted, right? Mm. And I think that played such a large role in my life because that was kind of the beginning to something that I didn't know what was going to happen, right? To the where after that event, I didn't tell my parents. I didn't tell nobody. I didn't tell my brothers. I didn't tell my friends. I kind of just went numb and I just acted like it never happened. And I think he even knew it was wrong, but He told me we were in his room. I don't know why, but my babysitter called everyone down. Me and him stayed in, and I asked to play the video game. And he's like, well, to play the video game, I have to touch you, and you have to touch me. And I'm like, okay. So at the time, I didn't think anything of it. You know, I grabbed him, and I was playing with him a little bit, you know. And I just remember, like, what I was grabbing was, like, super just greasy. Like, I can't even remember, like, I remember that distinct, like, it was just really greasy. And that's all I can remember is, like, just real slippery wiener, you know? And then he touched mine, you know? And then we went downstairs and ate lunch. And then everyone went back up to the room, acting like it never happened, right?
And you guys were, this was your first or second grade or something?
First, like, second grade.
How old, was he your same age or?
No. So I was in second grade and he was a senior in high school.
Oh, shit.
Yeah. So he was pretty much, I think he was 18. Mm. So he was pretty grown. But that was one event in my childhood that I could say is pretty traumatic that that I haven't shared, you know?
Yeah. Have you shared that with your parents ever?
I recently shared it with my family. Mm. I didn't tell them how much it has affected me. And I really don't even know how much it's really affected me. Mm. But I'm sure it could play a large role in who I am today and what I've done, you know? Mm-hmm. But that was my traumatic experience growing up, when I was in elementary school, as I grew up, got older, you know, for some reason, I started everything early. And this is where I do think that, I guess it did play a large role, right? Where when I was in fourth, fifth grade, when kids are just playing and being innocent, like I was in fourth grade, like touching myself, like looking at crazy stuff on the internet. I would hang out with like the older kids in the community, and they were already talking about having sex with women and stuff like that, right? And it could have just been an era, right? It could have just been the era that I was raised in, or it could have been related back to that incident that kind of made me more in tune to doing stuff like that. But you know, fifth grade, I remember I touched a girl's breasts. We made out, you know, and that was just the beginning. Sixth grade, that's when things started rocking and rolling, you know, like that's when anything that someone could do sexually, I was doing it in the sixth grade.
Really?
Yeah, in the sixth grade.
So you had sex in sixth grade?
So I didn't have sex in the sixth grade. I had sex in the seventh grade.
Oh.
But I could have had sex in the sixth grade, but I didn't pick up on the cue. Mm-hmm. So there's this girl, and she basically, like, we went to a party. The parents were there, but it was like they threw like a New Year's Eve party, and a bunch of kids spent the night. So that was like sixth grade, right? And then she went to the room. I never picked up on the cue. I didn't know what that meant. She was like, "Oh, okay, I'm gonna go to the room." I'm like, "Oh, okay, cool. I'm gonna stay down here." So that was in sixth grade, and then the real deal happened in seventh grade. But yeah, like that, and that was like the beginning to, like, I guess, doing things sexually as a kid. I got caught in seventh grade. My parents had a sit down with me. Like, my parents pulled out a bunch of
What'd you get caught doing?
Sex.
Oh, okay.
Sex. Yeah. Mm. So my girlfriend at the time, she thought she was pregnant, and then her mom called my mom. I don't know the dialogue between my mom and her mom, but I know my parents were pretty pissed, you know?
Wow.
And my mom was pretty worried that she was pregnant or not, right?
Mm-hmm.
But, or like I said, I don't know the exact dialogue. I just got in trouble for it. But, like, my parents were good parents, and like they pulled out photos, and they're like, "Hey, if you have unprotected sex, or this is what could happen, you could have a baby, or you could have HIV or STDs," and showed me pictures. So, you know, I think, as much as that kind of, like, it didn't enable me because I was already doing it, you know? But, like, they taught me how to do it the right way, mm-hmm. without getting someone pregnant. So from I never had unprotected sex. Like, I always stayed protected, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I don't want to make this a podcast about just sex and just a sex talk. But I wanted to tell my incident from when I was a kid that I've never told anyone, and I feel like this would be a good platform to do so.
Yeah, but, I mean, of course, if it's affected your life, it surely has impacted your life, right? Happening at such a young age, you know, going through that incident, I mean, absolutely, in my mind, pushed you to, you know, explore even more at a young age like that. So.
Correct. I do think that too. And then, I feel like my years of kind of being a knucklehead, I mean, I was never a thug or nothing crazy like that, you know. I'm not from a gang. But from years of fifth grade till about eighth grade, like, those are my years that I kind of got in trouble, right? Mm-hmm. Like, I was having sex. I got bullied in the sixth grade. So I got bullied in sixth grade. And then my father put me in boxing. And then I started to learn how to fight. So then, it's crazy how much just learning how to defend yourself could really give a young man confidence. Because I feel like after a few lessons, I was ready to go fight the bully, right? Like, I was like, you know what? Fuck this. Like, I'm ready, you know? So I was sixth grade. And then after, I think, you know, after you get picked on and then you get over it, you kind of have this, not macho, but you walk around with more confidence. Mm-hmm. And then that's when, like, more fights start coming, you know. I remember eighth grade, I got into a fight, quick story, and it was only me and two of my buddies. But at the time, like, they're, like, you know, they're kind of like, not my real friends, right? Because they just left me hanging. But a kid came, and he brought, like, 50 of his friends. He brought his older brothers. He brought the whole community, right? And it was just me and two other guys. And those two other guys were, like, nowhere to be found. But I would just, you know, like, that was in eighth grade. And after that incident, it kind of caused a little bit of, not chaos, but I know that those kids were, like, threatening my life. And then my father's a good father. He was like, no, I got your back. Like, I'm willing to do whatever it takes to protect you, son, you know? So my father was a big inspiration for me. He always pushed joining the military or going to college. And my family knew I wasn't going to go to college, and I knew I wasn't going to go to college either. So that was one of the rules, was military or college. So okay. I chose the military. I chose the Army because the Marines wouldn't take me. I always tell people this. I think the Army is just full of savages. I think the Army has some big players, but the Army wouldn't take the Marines wouldn't take me. I was speaking to a Marine recruiter. I failed my ASVAB. I had to take my ASVAB three times. So I had to take my ASVAB three times because I just couldn't pass it. I believe that I... this goes into one of the regrets, but it's kind of weird because it's going to throw this whole story off. But growing up, I feel like I never paid attention in school. Like, I always did the bare minimum. I never studied. I never wanted to get ahead. I went my whole school year with just getting by. And when it came to doing something I wanted to do, I couldn't because I kept failing. Mm-hmm. So the Marine recruiter, she was this lady. She was this white lady. And she was like, ah, you failed. She's like, hey, you're never going to be a Marine. Just, you should just go find a job. Like, she was a savage. She really, she was just like, you're never going to be a Marine. You're dumb. like, you should go find something else to do. Oh, man. And, I went to the Army recruiter, and as soon as I walked in, they're like, what up? And I'm like, hello. They're like, bro, we're going to do whatever it takes to get you in these doors. I'm like, okay. I failed. Bam. Failed. Bam. Took it again. Passed. So I passed. Went to the Army.
Did you get to pick your job?
So I wanted to go combat. So, like, I really wanted to go infantry. I had to get a eye waiver. So I had to get a waiver for my eyes because my eyes are so bad. Mm-hmm. But I wanted to go infantry. They said I was disqualified. And then I was going to go artillery. They said I was disqualified. And the only combat job that was open to me for what I scored on my ASVAB and my eyes was combat engineer, which doesn't make sense because you work with mines and C4, stuff like that. So it's kind of, it really makes you like, why would I be available to go in this job field and not the other ones, you know? Mm-hmm. So Army basic training, it was hard. I feel like joining the military is mentally hard. It wasn't physically. It wasn't. I could do it. I could run, jump, shoot. It was mentally. Being away from your family. I did my basic training in Fort Leonard Wood, Missouri. Fort Lost in the Woods, for those that know. And I was fortunate to meet this guy. His name's Christian Gilchrist. He's a black dude from Baltimore. Super cool guy. Like I personally think I owe him my life. And just from this action, right? Like it's funny that I could tell him that, but he recently got out of the Army. But one of the days that we could call home, a quick 5-minute phone call, my phone was dead and everyone was using their phones. I went to everyone. Can I use your phone? Can I use your phone? Can I use your phone? Everyone's like, no. Fuck you. Fuck you. And then I walked in the bathroom because I was like, fuck, man, you know, I started crying. So I was crying. So I was like, man, fuck everybody. So I went to the bathroom and, there's a dude that was just texting on his phone. I was like, hey bro, can I use your phone? I just want to call my mom, check in, just tell her that I'm doing okay. He was like, yeah, you good, my phone. I don't have anyone to talk to. And like that hurt. I was like, fuck. Like even when I was crying, I grabbed his phone and I'm like, wow, like that's deep, bro. I have someone to talk to. Called, right? Boom, boom, boom. And then ever since that day, me and him were locked in. We went to the same battalion, same group, same everything. Slept next to each other, in the bay, and I was able to do basic training in AIT with him. And he's one of the people that kept my head straight. Just because, I mean, everyone goes through basic training different, but more so me. I was like, what the fuck am I doing? Like, why am I here? Why am I doing this? Like, I could be at home. I could be going to college. I could be doing anything but this. And he was always right there. Like, bro, you got this. Keep your head on straight. Stop being dumb. Finish your time. Do your time and get out. So from that day, even in basic training, and I know it sounds pathetic. It makes me sound like, you know, a wuss. But even in basic training, I knew I wasn't going to make a lifetime career in the military. Also, another experience, maybe it was where I was stationed. Maybe it was a job. Maybe it was the state I was in. But my time in basic, I felt like, from the stories I've heard from people that I know, it's pretty similar to like prison or jail, you know? Like it was pretty segregated. Like the whites were with the whites, the Mexicans were only like 3 people, me included, right? It was just 3 of us, bunch of black people, maybe in a Native American here, like, you know, like some descent, right? Some others, but it was real segregated, like
in basic training.
In basic training,
how did you guys segregate yourselves? Like, what weren't the in Army it's drill sergeants, right? So the drill sergeants, weren't they responsible for grouping you guys up or putting you in squads or any of that?
So we were all in a bay, so we all slept in a, I say, 60-man bay. 60-man bay or so, split into three platoons, 60, 60, 60. So there's a bunch of other people, right? But we were in the same 60-man bay where we, 60 or maybe a bit less for a platoon, right? But like we all slept together. So it was like all our beds. And then segregated because, I mean, for the Army, you're not doing something every minute of the day. It's wake up, shave, PT, march, food, march back, have something on the agenda or don't have anything on the agenda, sit in the bay all day. March to lunch, march back, bam, bam, march,
right? So when you guys were amongst yourselves and the drill sergeants weren't harassing you, you would segregate yourselves?
Correct. So there's a... drill sergeants weren't with us 24/7.
Right.
The drill sergeants were only with us when we were doing events, activities, when they were teaching something, marching us. So wow. Pretty much we were in a big open bay. So dudes would fight. I had gone to multiple fights.
Did you?
Yeah. Like
walk me through one.
So I think this guy just... I don't know what it is. I think maybe I'm kind of like a Clark Kent, but when I have my glasses on, because I have contacts. So when I have glasses on, I feel like I look super nerdy. I don't know what it is. Maybe I'm just self-conscious, but I don't ever wear glasses because of this fact. When I wear glasses, I feel like everyone just thinks that I look like a teddy bear of glasses. I don't know what it is. So some black dude, you know, he walked by me and pushed me. He was like, "Ah, get out of my way." Boom. And I turn around, and it's always, and I think it might be a Cali thing because Nate Diaz does it. It has to be a Southern California thing. And he pushed me, and I slapped him. Boom. I was like, "Fuck you." And then
Nate Diaz wouldn't appreciate you saying Southern California, though, because he's Northern.
or just a whole, just an overall California thing. I think everyone from SoCal that grows up in like any type of environment, I think we all got that little fight in us. Or, you know, we have it in us, right? He pushed me, slapped him, and then we squared up. Boom. And then we went boom, 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 boom. And we started rocking him. And then he tackled me on the bunk. Bam. And this is how I always lose. I've lost multiple fights because I do not know any wrestling. So I advise everyone out there that wants to fight, learn wrestling or jiu-jitsu. Because at the time, I didn't know anything about wrestling. But he tackled me. Boom. I hit the bunk, and then all the guys broke it up. And, he didn't get in trouble. He was, like, the star in the platoon. He was, like, the head guy. He was, like, maybe 28. He played a little basketball. The drill sergeants, like, that was their favorite. And he was a little bit of a bully. But that day, he just picked on the wrong person. Like, he just... And it's not, I don't want to sit here and say that I'm this big macho guy, you know, but he put his hands on me, and that's what I was taught, you know, and ever since my incident from sixth grade, I'm like, I will never, I made sure to tell myself, if anyone ever puts their hands on me again, you know, it's go time.
Also, your pops put you in boxing too, so.
Yeah. So, but since that sixth grade incident, and then my pops put me in boxing, you know,
right.
It was one of those times where it's like, regardless, wherever I'm at, someone touches you, it's go time, you know?
Yeah. Wow.
So our Army life was pretty good. I don't have any... It's as much as hate I might get from this, I feel like Army doesn't have the camaraderie that the Marines might have.
Really?
And this is just what I've heard because I have a few friends that are Marines, but... In the Army, I feel like it's kind of dog-eat-dog, and it's real, real clicky, which I guess that could be every branch, but my experience in the Army is real clicky, dog-eat-dog, no camaraderie, a lot of people hate their job. We kind of just show up and go through the motions. So I was a combat engineer. I was with 299 BEB out of Fort Carson, Colorado. Did a lot of training. That's what I can say about where I was stationed is they made sure their soldiers were always trained. We were shooting at the ranges, doing field exercises, and we were able to train. So there was nothing crazy. I was fortunate to not have to go to war. As much as, you know, I think every young man wants to go to war to say that it's like a badge of honor. I served with many guys that came back, or I served with guys that were in my unit that did see war, and some of them weren't in the right mental. There was one guy, his name was, I don't want to say the name, but his name was Sergeant S. Let's just go with that. And he would always say that he's seen demons, and that he's depressed from the things that he had to do. I don't know exactly the extent of what he's had to do, right? But just from what he's told me, I guess I can say I'm fortunate to not have to have gone through that experience. The couple, I guess that something, a few incidents or my time in the military could be summed up as, you know, setting up my plans for when I got out of the military. And two things. One, I feel like I was the single guy, so I was friends with all married guys. So most of my friends were all married guys my same age. I was a single guy, so I felt like one of my good friends, his wife would make my life hell. Like she, I still resent her till this day. And hopefully she watches this. But I still resent her till this day. She made my life a living hell. And
how?
He was pretty much like my best friend. Pretty much like my, he still is my brother. But she would give him like, hey, you can't hang out with him this weekend. You see him at work. You can't hang out with him until next month. She would get mad if we went to the gym. She would get mad if we went to B-dubs for 2 hours. Like, it was never, like, I was never able to, like, to really genuinely hang out with him without her tripping on him. And basically...
Well, she didn't want her man going and hanging out with a single guy.
No, I get that. Now, and now that right? I'm married, now that I'm married, I could see. But still, you're young, you know? Yeah, like, you're still a young guy. Mm-hmm. And most of the time, we weren't doing anything wrong, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
Most of the time.
Now, were you single?
So, I wasn't single. I just wasn't married.
You weren't married. So, you know, obviously, your girlfriend couldn't come and live with you because you weren't married.
Correct.
Got it.
Correct, correct. So, I was in a long-distance relationship. Mm-hmm. I met my wife when we were 14 years old. And she did my time with me while I was in the military. Mm. But I had no one with me back when I was in Colorado.
Okay, yeah.
So I was the odd one out with no kid, no wife there.
Yeah.
It was just me.
Now, did you experience as a new Army boot any type of initiation into your unit, hazing? Anybody mess with you at all in any type of way?
No, it wasn't. You know what? We had good. There was no hazing. There was no hazing. It's funny because me and my friend.
I hate to call it hazing because that gets a real bad stigma, right? Mm-hmm. Because, you know, it just, there's initiations that each unit sometimes puts, you know, new Marines, new Army mm-hmm. boots, new Navy, you know, guys through, girls through. And that's not necessarily degrading, but, you know. Mm-hmm. Any incidents like that, you know, they'd mess with you at all, you didn't experience
that? No, so my time was good. This story is just going to sound like a bunch of sex and fighting. That's what my interview is going to sound like.
That's
sex,
fighting. That's what I'll headline it, bro.
Sex and fighting, but there was nothing. It was like, it was cool. I got to my unit, me and my buddy. The one I'm talking about, my brother, we flew out to basic together. We were in basic together. We got stationed together. We did our whole time together. We basically were with each other since we left San Diego to go to, like, Missouri.
Yeah.
So it was me and him. So we were like the young privates that were savage, that were, like, changing the era of military. And I say this with a smile on my face, but me and him were, like, the young two private savages. Like, a specialist comes up to us, like, they're like, fuck you. No, we're like, no, fuck you. And that, you know, that's not right. So I don't want to highlight that as my career. Mm. But I did do what I was told. I was always right uniform. I wasn't a shitbag. I always did what I was supposed to do. But no one hates me.
Going back to the camaraderie topic, do you think that is unit specific? And I ask that because, you know, I've talked to, you know, Green Berets, you know, 11 Bravo guys from the Army, and they seem to have built great camaraderie, you know, with their comrades and stuff. So would you say that it's unit specific? Or
I think it could have been. I think it could have been unit specific. It could have been era. It could have been time, unit specific. And from what I've heard, a lot of people that don't deploy, I heard there's not a lot of camaraderie.
Yeah, I think if you're not doing workups and if you're not in the field and going through the suck together and sleeping and eating and shitting together.
So we all did that.
You did that?
We did field rotations. We did everything. Training.
And you still didn't
build? There was not a lot of camaraderie.
Wow,
it was still split up. It was cliques within cliques within cliques.
That's unfortunate.
Of our whole group, you know?
Yeah.
And even the older heads, even like the staff sergeants, the sergeant first classes. My staff sergeant, gangster ass dude. He maybe he was just where we were at or job specific, but we were even marching, but he's been demoted twice. So maybe this is why too. He's a sapper ranger. Sapper ranger, combat engineer. And we're marching full formation on like a run, and we pass the sergeant major. And he even starts doing, he has to start chanting a, what's it called when you run and yell?
Cadence.
A cadence. He has to start calling a cadence that's like mocking the sergeant major. So like, even him being a savage staff sergeant, like he's out here calling cadence, mocking the sergeant major that's walking right next to it. Mm. So it could have been unit specific. I did my time in the service. I did it honorably. The only things that I think could come out of my time in the service is I think you learn how to, even being someone that didn't deploy, you learn how to filter out your emotions a little bit. Even though I didn't like what I was doing, I still did what I was supposed to do. Mm-hmm. And I think that kind of adds a little bit of who I am now today. But
talk to me about the, sorry to cut you off, mm-hmm. but you bring up a good point about not deploying. Mm-hmm. Did that affect you at all?
It doesn't affect you. All it does for me is I'm big on respect. If you respect me, I respect you, and I'll give you the benefit of the doubt first. Like mm-hmm. I'm always super respectful. So the only thing that is done for me is if I meet someone that's a combat veteran, I always tell them thank you, hats off to you, and I'll tell you, hey, I didn't go to combat, and I appreciate what you done, bro. Like mm-hmm. I'm always forthcoming on telling someone I appreciate them, and if they need someone that I'm here for them. I'm big on being there for someone because of that incident where that guy was there for me. Even though it's handing a phone to someone and going on deployment is two different things. But ever since that day, that's what showed me that even a stranger could help you and you could build a love for somebody. So yeah. Now when I meet combat veterans or people that are dealing with PTSD, I always tell them, hey, bro, you call me 24/7. You might not want to be talking to a ugly, chubby dude, but you could call me 24/7. And I'll pick up my phone. But the maybe not deploying was good or bad. A year before I got out of the military, I was diagnosed with cancer. Mm. So a little over a year before I got out, I found out I had cancer. Me and my buddy would always work out. Like we were like the gym bros. Like that's how we were known inside our platoon or our, you know, is like the gym bros. So we would be deadlifting with our shirts off, right? Like yelling, listening to Cali Muscle and Strength Cartel, right? And always working out. And my friend was like, bro, there's a baseball sticking out of your back. And I was like, wow, that's weird. I found it in November. And then I was like, okay, let me just go get a massage. I try to get it massaged out. I try to foam roller it out. And I try to just make it go away on my own. Come January, it was getting bigger. And my wife now, girlfriend at the time, she went out there to visit me. And she seen it. And she was just like, that's really big, babe. Like, you have to get that check. So I went to the doctors, got a check. Turned out it was cancer. And I do think the military or Army specific, or my experience dealing with medical professionals in the Army has been traumatic or not, you know, it wasn't the best experience. It's made me, each time I step into a doctor's office, I feel like I have like anxiety, like my heart's always beating. But the Army doctor told me, he was just like, the thing we took out of your back, it's cancer. I'm going to refer you to a specialist. I can't tell you how this is going to end. And good luck. Me being a young 21-year-old boy in Colorado by myself, like it's just like, I feel like I don't want to feel those emotions. Like it's like my stomach dropped. I was just like, what do I do, sir? You know, I was crying. And he was just like, hey, man, take this packet with you. His name is Dr. Dylan. Go see him. Boom. Bye.
Why was he saying good luck? Was he able to tell you whether he was able to remove all the cancer or not? Or what was going on with that?
So I went in and... okay, so I might freak a lot of people out, but people don't get freaked out. So I had a cancer. It's called liposarcoma. So many people inside the world, they have these little fatty tumors. Lots of people have them. They're called lipomas. Lots of people will have tumors on their body. If you're watching this, or you yourself might have something, right? It's not a big deal. It's only a big deal if things start growing, if things a penny to a quarter to a penny to a quarter to a baseball. Right, in a 3 month time span, that's when to be worried. But I was awake when I did my surgery, and they just thought it was going to just be a routine pop out the tumor, and it's probably just a fatty tumor. It's not going to be anything crazy. I was laying on my stomach. I was fully awake. Like, they numbed my area. They numbed my back, and then like the doctor's so unprofessional. He takes it out, or he cuts me and he scrapes it, and he takes most of it out, and then he's like, oh my gosh, this looks odd. And then I'm on my stomach, I'm like, what sir, like what looks odd? He's like, oh, nothing. And there was a nurse that was helping him, and then she's like, oh yeah. And like, I'm fully awake, I'm like, what? I'm like, am I okay? They're like, oh yeah, we're just gonna send this for biopsy, but it looks a little weird. So he knew that day from what he's told me. And then he had to get it sent out. And then he got the results and read it to me. Mm. I don't know what kind of operation they're running at their medical division on Fort Carson.
Oh, so he couldn't confirm to you that it was cancer because he still had to send it for testing.
Correct.
That's why he was saying good luck.
No. That was that day.
Oh.
When he gave me my results. Because think about it. He took something, sent it, got results, made a call to refer me to a specialist. Mm. That's it. So he didn't know anything about scans, about blood work, nothing. Mm-hmm. So he just got my stuff and just told me that. So I guess that's all he could say, right? I guess when you're saying it like that, that's all he could say. But for me, like, not knowing, or for someone that's getting diagnosed with something that doesn't have the answers, it sounds pretty scary.
Of course.
So that day, my friend, he just had his baby, and after I got my results, my packet and stuff, I went to go see them. Fort Carson is kind of south, and the hospital he had his baby is off post at a hospital a little bit up north, a little bit near the Air Force Base, because the Air Force Base and Fort Carson are kind of near each other. So I made my way up there just to tell her congratulations. The evil witch, but I still went to go say congratulations, and went to go say congratulations, bam, 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 and I just kind of just like felt like I got back in my car, I was crying, I really just didn't want to be alive, and I think that maybe that comes from not knowing what's ahead of you, and you're scared. And you don't know what to do, right? Like, you don't. I was raised by a family that did love me. And I know that I knew that my family loved me, right? Or I still do know my family loves me. But at this time, I got in my truck. And it was a rainy day. And I just wasn't thinking. My heart was just thumping. And I wasn't thinking. And I was like, I don't want to be here. I don't want to be here. I'm crying. And I'm driving back to base. And I'm like, if people know, I had a 03 Chevy Silverado kin cab or crew cab. Or just for those that know, like the smaller trucks are kind of like easy to slip out when it's raining and stuff like that. Like, you could easily like slide them, right? Or, you know, spin or whatever. But it was raining. I got on the freeway. I was crying. I didn't know, like, Everything was just blurry. I genuinely wanted to kill myself. I wanted to die because I didn't want to go through the emotions that I was feeling. So I just gassed it. I was just like hauling ass. And I really want, like, who knows what I was, you know, maybe I was just being drama. But I gassed it in the thought of, I hope I slide out and die. Like, it's pouring. I'm gassing it. I just want to slide out and end my life. But all that happened was I gassed it. I made a turn. I, you know, switched my wheel. I started turning. I flew off the freeway into just like grass, you know, like sometimes with freeways, it's like road and then there's a bunch of grass on the side. Spinned out, you know, and then was just sitting there and was just like, you know, like my mom would be so devastated if I didn't come back home, you know, like I had it like after me spinning out, I didn't hit nobody. But at that moment, I did want to take my life. Right. And that's what I was doing right there. And then was hoping that something happened. Right. I spinned off into the grass, sat there. And I was just like, you know what? My mom loves me. My family loves me. I'm being selfish right now. If I don't come home, my family's going to be torn apart without me. Like, my family loves me. And then, you know, I pulled my big boy pants up and, you know, I was just like, fuck. You know, eyes all puffy. Got back on the freeway and went back to the base, right? And that's what kept me going. Like, that was my thing, was do whatever you got to do to make it back home. Get home. Do whatever you had to do. So I see my specialist. I went through all the stuff I had to do. I had to get another surgery. But I just feel like going through all these small things from childhood to, you know, when you're a teenager, high school, military, like you're overcoming these small things. And I feel like what it did to me is kind of made me not emotionless, because I could have a lot of emotions, you know, but I do have that switch, to go numb and to like just go through it, you know, like don't feel your, just do it, turn off your emotion, and it's just like that machine, you know, just keep going. And I got through it. I got out of the military, and today I'm six years in remission. I plan on being a lifetime remission. I have a little baby I have to live for, so I've been trying to get healthy, and I have a little baby and wife I have to live for, and I have to get healthy and make sure I live as long as possible. Mm-hmm. But yeah, like that was my transition out of the military. That whole year, since I was going through surgeries and checkups and stuff, they pushed me to the, in the Army, they have, I'm having a brain fart, but it's like a battalion, and then within a battalion, your platoons, and then within your whole,
like a medical platoon or something?
No, it wasn't, but they moved me to where I was working directly with like the commander and first sergeant. Mm. So like, cause I technically wasn't, deployable, I guess you could say. Mm-hmm. So like the last year they moved me, so I was pretty much like a paperwork person, like for the commander and first sergeant. Mm. Ops, the ops room. Mm-hmm. Like the army guys will know what I'm talking about, but they moved me to ops, to operations. So I was fortunate to move there, like, you know, my last year while I was getting all my stuff done. And I had lots of time to think. So my big plan was, I'm gonna get out of the military, I'm going to be a bounty hunter, repo man, real estate agent. That was my, like, those were like my three. I'm like, one of those three things are gonna work. One of those things are like, they're gonna work, right? And I remember talking to my wife, and she was like, Jesse, you're crazy. You're crazy. It's not that she didn't believe in me, but just where my head was at, I just knew I had to throw stuff at the wall and make it stick. And making that transition, that's what I did. I got out of the military. I jumped into real estate. That's been my bread and butter ever since. And that's been my career the last couple of years. That's how I feed my family. The only thing that I can say is, you know, me and my wife have been working a lot lately on building our relationship up. But I feel like ever since the military, I've been kind of like clocked out. And this is something that my little brother has pointed out to me. And like my family said stuff too, but it's like, sometimes I only have one mode, and sometimes, like I said, I could just turn off that emotion button and not care about what everyone else is doing. It's just focus on what Jesse's doing. And my wife and my little brother have both said, you know, you have to smell the roses sometime and enjoy life and be happy. Like, you don't have to be this crazy guy that's just running around all day that, you know, has no regard to anybody. You could be a good person and care and slow down sometimes, you know? Mm-hmm. But yeah, I do owe a lot of who I am today. I owe it to you know, my wife, my family, and I think every marriage, you know, you have to work at it. It's not easy.
Yeah,
and I do appreciate my wife for holding me down the last couple of years, because as you know, transitioning out of the military, as going through the cancer, and six months ago, that's when I had my last scan. And up to then, since I got out of the military, I feel like I've had like a time clock inside my head. So I always was like, I'm gonna die. And that's what I put that in my head like the last couple years. So I'm like, I have to do all these things. I have to achieve all these things in a short amount of time, because I don't know how long I'm going to be here. And I think that affected, you know, my relationship with my parents, my family, my wife, until, you know, until I recognized it and I started fixing it. But I was just turned off, right? Like, I was just so numb to everything, because I'm like, I have one mission. That's just, I have to do this. And then 6 months ago, when I got my last CT scan by the books, and then they say, just come back when you think there's something wrong with you, or if you feel anything, see anything, and stuff like that. Like, that day I got my results, they said, you're good. Like, I broke down in front of like my wife, and she's never really seen me like that before, but I was just like, it's weird. It's a weird feeling when you work every day for something because you think of this, and you accomplish everything you want to accomplish, and then you realize that your clock's not over. You have all this time. And then it's like, what am I supposed to do now? You know, like, what? Like,
would you say your wife played a big role in helping you transition through all that?
I think my wife has played a large role. I think my wife played a large role. Yes. I think my wife and family. Hmm. I have siblings. My little brother is my best friend. And he's like my opposite. But he's everything I'm not, and I'm everything he's not. So I think both my wife and they both played a pretty large role on how I move day to day. But yeah, it's definitely crazy. And I want to say that I want to give advice to everyone out there that think that they don't have enough time. Like, that's something that I always thought was, I didn't have enough time. And I think you do have enough time. And you could be the person that you want to be. You just got to make it happen. Mm. And I think I believe that procrastination kills. And a quote from a really good friend of mine is, he says that the richest place in the world is the graveyard. Inside the graveyard, there's a bunch of people that didn't use their potential. So whether or not the viewer is fighting for their life, trying to find themselves, trying to get over what they did in the military, or just trying to get by day to day, you know, like you could do it. And, you know, I appreciate you for allowing me to come here, you know, like, yeah. I think it's pretty badass.
Well, thanks for being here, Jesse. Appreciate it, man. It takes a lot of courage to come sit and share your story, brother.
Yeah, of course, bro. I appreciate you.
I got bad thoughts that make my mind scared. Hold me hostage and they don't fight fair. Who gon' pray for me and wipe on my tears? Who gon' save me if you not right here? Move this darkness and make my sight clear. Take me away cause I don't like here. Ghosts of my past, they fill in the night air. Wake me up, I'm trapped in my nightmares.